Good morning, and welcome to the United Technologies and Raytheon conference call. On the call today from United Technologies are Greg Hayes, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, and Akhil Johri, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. On the call from Raytheon are Tom Kennedy, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, and Toby O'Brien, Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. This call is being carried live on the internet, and there is a presentation available for download from the website of both companies at www.utc.com and www.raytheon.com. The companies remind listeners that any forward-looking statements concerning the proposed merger and their respective financial and business impacts and related materials provided in this call are subject to risks and uncertainties. SEC filings, including the 10-Q and 10-K reports, provide details on impact factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from those anticipated in the forward-looking statements. In addition, in connection with the merger to be discussed today, UTC will file with the SEC a registration statement, which will include a prospectus of UTC and a joint proxy statement of UTC and Raytheon that will contain important information about UTC, Raytheon, the merger, and related matters. Once the call becomes open for questions, we ask that you limit your first round to one question per caller to give everyone the opportunity to participate. You may ask further questions by reinserting yourself into the queue as time permits. Please go ahead, Mr. Hayes.
Okay, thank you, Amanda. Good morning, everyone. I want to thank everybody for joining us today on short notice. We're obviously tremendously excited to announce that our boards this past weekend unanimously approved the merger of equals between UTC and Raytheon, creating a premier systems provider with advanced technology that will define the future of the aerospace and defense industry. This merger is going to bring together two leading companies with unsurpassed technological capabilities, both for today and into the future. As a combined company, we will deliver intelligent, innovative, and cost-effective solutions across the full spectrum of aerospace and defense needs, creating significant value for both our shareowners and our customers. We'll get into the details in just a bit, but as you know, United Technologies is in the process of separating its business into three independent companies, which we announced last year. These, of course, are Otis and Carrier, and our aerospace business, which has roughly $45 billion of sales this year. And that's, of course, comprised of our Collins Aerospace unit and the Pratt & Whitney business. The proposed merger combines our aerospace portfolio with Raytheon and will closely follow the separation of Otis and Carrier from UTC, which remains on track to be completed during the first half of 2020. And as I said recently, our target is for the end of the first quarter of next year. So during today's call, Tom and I will walk through the benefits of the combination. And we also, of course, have Akhil and Toby here, our CFOs, who are going to participate in the Q&A session. So, of course, I hope you're following along on the webcast on page 3. This merger of United Technologies and Raytheon will bring together two aerospace and defense leaders with long track records of industry-defining innovation in our respective sectors. Now, with our highly complementary portfolios and the opportunity to combine our world-class R&D platforms, we can even more effectively invest, innovate, and serve our customers. This is critical given the complex and rapidly evolving industry landscape, and importantly, we will be able to invest through the business cycles. By uniting our two companies, we'll be even better positioned to address the highest priorities of our customers for the future, particularly in the fast-growing A&D segments like hypersonics, directed energy, and cyber protection. We'll walk you through many of these opportunities for value creation and why this deal at this time will enable us to define the future of our global aerospace and defense business. Now on to slide 4. It's just an overview of the transaction. First, most importantly, this is a stock merger of equals. Following the spinoffs of Otis and Carrier by United Technologies, and it's expected to be tax-free for U.S. income tax purposes. UTC shareowners will own 57% of the combined company, and Raytheon shareowners will own 43%. The combined company will be named Raytheon Technologies, and is expected to trade on the NYSE under the ticker symbol of RTX. In terms of how we plan to manage the business moving forward, Tom will assume the role of Executive Chairman of the Board for 2 years following the completion of the merger, and I'll assume the role of CEO of the formation and succeed Tom as Chairman of the Board after his two-year tenure. In terms of the board's composition, we'll have 15 members, 8 from UTC and 7 from Raytheon. Raytheon Technologies, as we'll be called, will be headquartered in the greater Boston metro area. Now, we want to emphasize, particularly for the benefit of United Technologies employees, this does not mean that we're exiting operations in Connecticut and moving to Boston. In fact, Raytheon Technologies will maintain a strong presence in Connecticut for years to come. As I mentioned earlier, the separation of Otis and Carrier remains on track with a dedicated team of over 600 people today working on the execution of this. The merger with Raytheon is not expected to impact the timing or the cost associated with the separation. So why do we do this? We believe the reasons to do this deal are compelling for both companies, and that's why we're confident this combination brings strategic and financial benefits for our shareholders and all of our stakeholders. First of all, the combination creates a platform-agnostic A&D provider that is best positioned to meet complex and emerging customer needs through unsurpassed technology and innovation. Our companies have highly complementary and balanced aerospace and defense portfolios, as well as world-class engineering team and a world-class workforce. We expect the combination of these assets will deliver new revenue opportunities, cost synergies, and joint technological advancements. Diversification, of course, across the programs, platforms, and customers will make the combined business more resilient across the business cycles and give us the financial flexibility to support significant R&D investments that will help drive sustainable growth both for today and for decades to come. The merger is also expected to unlock significant shareowner and customer value. The combined companies is expected to achieve more than $1 billion in gross annual run rate cost synergies by year 4, post-close. We also expect to have significant revenue synergy opportunities from the technologies. And the all-stock merger structure allows shareholders of both companies to participate in the future upside potential of the combined businesses. At the same time, with greater breadth of capabilities and increased financial strength, Raytheon Technologies will be better positioned to lead the growing aerospace and defense sector and provide customers with cost-effective solutions in this increasingly complex environment. Moving on to page 6. Initially, our thoughts are that Raytheon Technology is organized into 4 sizable segments that are all leaders in their respective area. The Raytheon team has successfully organized its company to align with evolving customer requirements in the past and will further simplify its structure by consolidating the 2 segments going forward. Intelligence, space, and airborne systems will be a combination of Raytheon and United Technologies capabilities. It will be predominantly comprised of the 3 Raytheon businesses: space and airborne systems, intelligence, information and services, and Forcepoint. And we'll also be looking to add or consolidate the capabilities of our mission systems business, which currently operates as part of Collins Aerospace. The next segment, integrated defense and missile systems, will be comprised of Raytheon's remaining business segments, missile systems and integrated defense systems. Pratt & Whitney will continue to operate as one of the world's leading manufacturers of aircraft engines for the military, commercial, business, and general aviation markets. And, of course, Collins Aerospace will continue to operate as the leading global provider of technologically advanced aerospace systems. The organization structure we're describing will position Raytheon Technologies for success while minimizing integration risk and operational disruption. Now on to page 7. Joining these 2 industry-leading companies will create one of the best-positioned A&D companies in the industry with a diversified, platform-agnostic suite of offerings and balance across end markets. This is a key differentiator, particularly through the business cycles. The company will also be diversified across geographies with about 45% of our revenue from international customers and the potential to achieve further global presence given the macro trends that we see in the commercial aerospace and defense sectors. Okay, let's take a look at the cost synergies. Raytheon Technologies will benefit from a team that knows how to deliver on synergy targets. As you all know, we've exceeded our targets historically, and we'll strive to see that trend continue. On that note, of course, we're updating our previously announced estimate of annual cost synergies associated with the Rockwell Collins acquisition from $500 million of run rate synergies to $600 million of synergies by year four. These synergies are independent from those that we estimate for the combination of United Technologies and Raytheon, which we expect to total at least $1 billion in gross annual cost synergies by year four. Of course, about half of that synergy benefit will be shared with our U.S. government customers. Based on the work completed to date, we're confident in getting savings in supply chain, procurement, as well as corporate and facilities, IT, and other G&A expenses. Now on to cash flow. One of the most exciting aspects of the combined company is our financial profile, including a strong balance sheet and growing free cash flows. The combination will allow us for continued investment while safeguarding our capital return priorities. With each business contributing strong organic growth profile, free cash flow is expected to reach about $8 billion by 2021. And looking beyond 2021, we expect cost synergies resulting from the transaction to continue to benefit our cash runway. Raytheon Technologies will be committed to disciplined capital allocation. Between share repurchase and continued commitment to our historical dividend philosophies, we expect to return a cumulative of $18 to $20 billion to capital to our shareholders in the first 3 years post-close, $18 to $20 billion. Given the free cash flow outlook and the net debt level of about $26 billion at closing, we also expect to achieve a credit rating in the A category from day one. So clearly, we believe the merger results in a great outlook that benefits both sets of shareholders and stakeholders over the long term. And with that, I'd like to hand it over to Tom, who will highlight the technology story, which is what we're all really excited about. Tom?
Thank you, Greg. Let me start by echoing Greg's comments and say that I, too, am very excited about the combined company we are creating, especially when I look at our complementary technology capabilities. Both of our companies have long histories of delivering world-class technology and innovation. So let me walk you through how, together, we will enhance our solutions to meet our customers' evolving needs. As you can see on slide 10, the technologies of the combined company are complementary, and there are many ways Raytheon's capabilities can enhance commercial aerospace offerings. And in turn, we see UTC capabilities enhancing Raytheon's advanced solutions. These capabilities reach across all domains, including air, land, sea, space, and cyberspace. Both of our companies are platform agnostic, which means our best innovation and technology will be accessible to a wide range of our customers. This is powerful as it allows us to both improve current franchises and create new franchises in the future. Turning to slide 11, one of the primary strategic benefits of this merger of equals is that with a strong balance sheet and robust cash generation, Raytheon Technologies will enjoy enhanced resources and financial flexibility. These will support R&D and capital investments through business cycles and produce meaningful revenue synergy opportunities from shared technologies. With a combined $8 billion of company and customer-funded research and development spend, 7 R&D centers of excellence, 60,000 engineers, and 38,000 active patents, the combined company will develop new critical technologies faster and more efficiently than ever before. And by joining forces, we will strengthen our competitive position in the dynamic global marketplace. The combined technology portfolio includes capabilities tied to key priorities across the aerospace and defense sectors. We are in a position to immediately address R&D priorities in defense, including hypersonics, directed energy, and ISR in contested environments. Raytheon Technologies will also provide commercial aerospace solutions to enable our customers to manage significant air traffic growth and increase cybersecurity needs while reducing operating costs through advanced analytics and the application of artificial intelligence. Let me take you through a little more detail on slide 12. First, let's look at a few synergy opportunities in defense, starting with hypersonics and future missile systems. The extreme speed of weapon systems has become a key differentiator. Even if these systems are detected, their speed makes interception extremely difficult. Merging our two companies brings Raytheon's deep expertise in vehicle integration, advanced guidance and control, and payload, and combines it with UTC's world-class propulsion technology, including high-temperature material and thermal and signal management. Raytheon Technologies will also develop and produce future high-speed missile systems to meet DoD requirements for new capabilities across a wide range of mission profiles. Let's take another example. Directed energy weapons are a key DoD priority. We expect Raytheon Technologies to be uniquely capable of meeting this growing requirement by combining Raytheon's high-powered microwave and high-energy laser emitters, United Technologies' high-density, compact power generation and distribution capability. Turning to 13, we also expect the combination to yield additional significant opportunities in commercial aerospace. UTC has been a leader in this growing market for decades. We look forward to applying Raytheon's complementary expertise to further strengthen the combined company. For example, commercial aircraft are increasingly connected. Operators are already seeking to reduce costs and increase reliability through connectivity that enables improved prognostics, health monitoring, and fleet management. These are all areas that our combination will enhance through advanced data analytics and the application of AI. But with greater connectivity and intelligence comes the increased risk of cyber threats. As the cyber threat continues to evolve, resilient, adaptable protections are required. The combined company brings together Raytheon's advanced cyber capabilities with UTC's aircraft systems expertise, as well as data networks, communications, and information management systems. This combination will create highly advanced cyber solutions and capabilities to help airlines and OEMs deal with emerging cyber threats. These are just a few of the advanced solutions we envision bringing to the market. The bottom line is that we expect to deliver significant value to our customers through the quality and innovation of our products and the cost effectiveness of our systems. And the value is not only for customers. On slide 14, we outline how this merger of equals benefits all stakeholders. Our dedicated, innovative workforce is critical to the successful combination of our two companies. We are excited to offer opportunities to our people that result from being part of a larger, more competitive organization post-merger. With greater R&D and a focus on high-growth markets, our employees will experience new, expanded career paths and increased professional development. Within industry, we expect to expand our leadership in delivering the most advanced technologies, software, and engineering capabilities. And these enhanced solutions will create new opportunities across the combined supply chain. And in our communities, we expect to continue our legacy of being good corporate citizens. As Greg mentioned, the combined company will be headquartered in the greater Boston metro area while retaining a corporate presence in existing locations. Our ongoing commitment and investments in our local communities will continue across our combined organization. Finally, on slide 15, let me close on the strong value proposition we are offering our share owners, who will be able to continue to participate in the future upside potential of our combined company. Raytheon Technologies will enjoy greater resources and stability and will benefit from an increased addressable market. It will have an attractive financial profile with strong growth opportunities and minimal integration risks. Our cost synergy expectations are realistic and achievable, and our long-term revenue synergy opportunities from technologies are unparalleled. In the near term, we have a line of sight to continued earnings growth and margin expansion opportunity. And a strong balance sheet coupled with accelerating cash flows will provide Raytheon Technologies the flexibility to invest for future growth while prioritizing return of capital to share owners. Our two companies today have similar cultures. Integrity, innovation, and customer focus are in our DNA. And we both have committed leadership teams. Our boards and management teams have diverse experience and proven track records, and all agree that this merger will define the future of aerospace and defense. With that, we will open the call for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you do have a question, please press star and the number one key on your touchtone telephone. And if your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Our first question comes from the line of Ronald Epstein of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ron.
So maybe just a broad question on when we think about operating, right? I mean, you know, if you look at the timing of the deal, right, there's a lot going on, right? You've got, you know, UTC, you know, doing its spins, and then you have this going on. Will there be anybody left at the company to focus on operations, particularly at the senior management level?
Yeah, Ron, let me start there, and I'll let Tom finish. But from a UTC perspective, we have never lost our focus on operations. Even the two spin companies, you know, Carrier and Otis today, are very focused on meeting their customer, their needs. You know, Bob Ledoux and Kelly Ortberg over at the aerospace side, and their focus is completely on their customers and their businesses. I would tell you, most of the workload associated with this transaction, with everything that's going on, is actually falling on our corporate office, as will this next step as we go through the combination with Raytheon. Our folks are working really hard, but it's a corporate office initiative, not an operating unit initiative. And as you know, those guys are remain focused. And I think you'll hear that next week when you hear Bob and Kelly talk about their businesses when we're in Paris, and you'll continue to see a good performance out of our commercial businesses as well. So a lot of work, but I wouldn't worry about anybody losing sight. We know operations remain the key to our long-term success, and our customer focus is unparalleled.
Yeah, Ron, let me echo that. The operations are our number one priority. We will have separate teams working on all the merger and activities throughout the year until we close. So we don't see any issue relative to the operational side. We're definitely focused on that. We'll continue to operate the same rhythm throughout our business in terms of our operation reviews and the visits that I make to each one of our plants across the country.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, Ron, as you think about it, we've talked about the structure of how we're going to operate. This is, I would say, almost an integration light type of merger. This is really just a corporate office. You know, we'll look at our mission systems business and see how we can take that capability and then spread it across some of the Raytheon complementary businesses. But beyond that, this is not going to really affect our businesses or our operations really anywhere. So, again, the focus will remain meeting customer needs, and that will never change.
And as a follow-on to that, it kind of dovetails with what you just said. Can you talk about the history of the deal? How did it come about? What brought you guys together?
Go ahead, Tom.
Well, you know, it's a small industry, but it turns out back in 2018, the first quarter, you know, Greg announced that he was looking at spinning off Carrier and Otis. And I think, Ron, I think even in some meetings when you've asked me and or someone has asked me relative to what's on the plate in the future for Raytheon, what would be the something that we would do in the M&A area, and I think I repeatedly said this, if it was a big deal, it would be looking at a company just like Raytheon, a company that was platform agnostic, had both existing franchises, and then also had the ability to create new franchises with technology to essentially set up the future for the company. And lo and behold, after you drop off Otis and Elevator and you look at United Technologies, there's a platform agnostic company with great technology, great franchises, and a great future for franchise generation, and then also with a good position in the international marketplace. I mean, it's like a mirror in terms of, obviously, we're complementary. We don't have overlap. But relative to the fundamentals of the business and how it's structured, and especially the technology base, I mean, it's essentially like looking at Raytheon in the mirror to a certain degree. And so so I did call Greg probably in the early summer of last year. We had some discussion. Obviously, Greg was very busy. He was setting up to work out the details of the Otis and Carrier spinoff. But he did say, and he did recognize that if we could make something like this happen, how tremendous it would be, not just for our shareholders, but also for our customers and obviously our employees. So it was kind of like a win-win if we could figure out how to do it. So we let Greg have some peace, and he came back in the later part of 2018 and gave me a call and said, hey, Tom, I think I got this spin stuff aligned, and we're ready to move, and now's a good time to start talking about this merger of equals. And so by January, we got our teams engaged. Obviously, the boards were kept informed of all this during the period, and we kind of opened up the gates and sent the team off and running from January, and then here we are today.
You know, let me just add, when Tom called, We were just in the middle of trying to make this strategic decision around the spins, and we were also trying to close Rockwell Collins. So we were a little busy. But I got to tell you, when Tom, you know, the first thing Tom says, I think, you know, it would be two great companies, we'd come together. You know, this had been on our radar screen forever, as had Rockwell Collins and even Goodrich, you know, for a decade or more. And so the compelling logic was there. Obviously, you know, last summer was not the best time to make this move. But the real benefit of this, Ron, I think, you know, you need to think, oh, you're so busy, you're doing the spins, you're still integrating Rockwell Collins. This is a huge benefit to UTC going forward, and the fact that we're not going to have to set up a separate corporate office for the aerospace business post-spin. You know, everybody was worried about dis-synergies associated with, you know, the remaining corporate office functions and all that extra cost and what are you going to do. This answers the mail on that 100%. We're going to bring together two great corporate office teams. We're going to pick the best of both worlds. We're going to have a world-leading SG&A function. And I'm not going to have to worry about, you know, setting this up on my own. I get the benefit of Raytheon's great staff along with ours, and I think this is just going to be really fortuitous timing, which, again, nobody could have predicted, but clearly that's a huge benefit to us on top of the technology that Raytheon brings. This is truly a great combination.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Sheila Kuyaglu of Jefferies. Your line is open.
Thank you. Greg, you've had this vision of becoming a global aerospace supplier for some time, and Tom, you've been very focused on the global threat environment, so congratulations on bringing it all together. I guess my question is regarding cost synergies. What gives you confidence that you'll be able to execute on cost synergies, given this is a defense deal? And what do you think will be the most difficult to obtain and not give back to the customer, or how does UTX contract differently as a multi-industrial company at the moment? Thank you.
Well, let me start, and we've got our two great CFOs sitting across the table. They could weigh in with all the detail. But, Sheila, if you know UTC's history, and I'll start back with Goodrich that we did back in 2012, and we started out with about a $350 million cost synergy target. I think we stopped counting after about $650 million. But cost takeout, you know, it's part of the DNA. And again, this is not always easy, but at the end of the day, it's compelling because it brings value to our shareholders and our customers. On Rockwell Collins, which we closed last November, the initial target was $500 million. Today, we see at least $600 million, and we're not going to stop counting yet. I think, you know, Kelly Ortberg and Dave Gitlin, running that business with Kelly until recently, done a tremendous job in bringing those companies together. So we've got a track record. We know how to do this. And the $1 billion, while, you know, okay, people say that's 1% of the combined market value. It doesn't seem like a big number. The fact is this is a corporate office integration. And so the synergies that we're going to see are primarily on the procurement side. We're going to see some on the SG&A side. There'll be some facilities rationalization, but, you know, we're not looking to consolidate a bunch of factories, and we're not taking out a lot of jobs. In fact, we're going to create a lot of jobs through this merger. I think Tom mentioned to me they're going to add, 10,000 people this year?
Yeah, we'll be adding 10,000 employees this year in the company. We see a continued growth out into 2020 and beyond relative to significant hiring. So this is net-net, this will be a job increase across our company, and also, I believe,
So it's a similar story on the UTC side, almost a similar number. I think we've hired about 5,500 year to date, on track for more than 10,000 this year. Now, of course, Sheila, as you know, because it will be 50% defense, and a big chunk of this is U.S. government, a big chunk of the synergies go back to our customer. But again, I think if you're sitting in the DOD saying, you know, why do we like this? Well, not only do you bring the technology that nobody else can, you're also going to have cost savings on future contracts. So while it's a give back, I think, again, it's one of the compelling reasons why we think our biggest customer out there, which is the DOD, is going to really like this deal. And we'll look for more. I mean, you know, we're never done with the billion or so. I think the more exciting part is really the revenue synergies that Tom has talked about. And while we haven't quantified those, I think, you know, you'll take a look across our portfolio, and it's exciting, the things that we can do together.
And then, Sheila, it's Toby. The only thing I'd add with what Greg said about the give back to the government, right, it also makes us more competitive, you know, going forward as a combined company. When we approached these synergies early on, we both sides kind of did it independently, and at least on a bottom line basis, we're in the same ballpark. We've matured that a little bit, and I second what Greg said. I think, you know, the $1 billion is very doable, and we'll certainly be driving to put some upside on top of that once we get into the detailed planning a little bit more.
Thank you. Thanks for the color.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Nigel Coe of Wolfe Research. Your line is open.
Oh, thanks. Good morning. Maybe starting off with a question for Greg. Question for Tom. You called Greg initially. Why was UTC Aerospace the right partner, strategic partner for Raytheon?
Well, it goes back, as I discussed on the prior question. I mean, we were looking for a company that was kind of in line with Raytheon in terms of its business structure and the underlying technology. We were looking for getting some more complementary technology. And the reason we were so technology-focused is, you know, we're seeing a significant change in technology. I mean, for years we knew about Moore's Law and that technology was changing on a linear fashion, but in reality we were actually on an exponential curve, the first part of it. And we're starting to see significant increases in technology growth in multiple areas that affect our business. So we believe that we need to invest in technology and that capability. And one element of this merger with United Technologies is they have a very good technology base also, and it's complementary to ours. So I think it gives us the combined technology to be able to ride this new wave of technology growth in multiple areas, you know, and such as artificial intelligence, machine learning, quantum computing, nanotechnology. I mean, all these areas are coming to fruition right now, and to be able to have the right technology base is important. For example, we have combined between us 60,000 engineers. We have over $8 billion of R&D spend that we have access to per year. And so it gives us that technology engine to allow us to drive growth across our existing franchises, but also to create the next franchises for the future. So it was a great play, and this is, again, obviously after the spin out of Otis and Carrier, the remaining UTC company has all those attributes. And as we just talked about on both of our scripts and up front, you can see all the benefits of this merger, not just for our shareholders, but also definitely for our customers, our government customers. In fact, some of that synergy will go back into their pockets relative to our give back to them in this in merger, but also to our employees. It opens up a whole set of growth areas and opportunities for our employees moving forward also. It was just a great deal all around.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Quick one for Keel as a follow-on. The spin timelines for Otis Carrier, it doesn't sound like there's any impact, but does this transaction have any ramifications for the tax structure and the carve-outs?
No, Nigel, none whatsoever. I think the timeline, as Greg said in his comments, is still on track to hopefully achieve by the end of first quarter, but definitely in the first half of next year. So all on track.
Great. Thank you very much.
Nigel.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Carter Copeland of Melius Research. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, gents, and congratulations.
Thank you, Carter.
Thanks, Carter.
Greg, I hope you know you're going to be Boston-based. You got to be able to talk Boston sports on the call. It's like a requirement because they're in all the big games. So just prepare yourself.
Hey, Carter, just to be clear, I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, so it's going to be hard.
Well, we got a problem. We're working on it, let me tell you. You're
going to have to work him pretty hard, so it's all good. Just a quick clarification and a question. One, Akil, the $8 billion, is there any pension in that? And then two, you know, the real question here, you know, this comment that you made about investing through the business cycles and just a little more color on that. I mean, do you collectively see a benefit to being able to take a bit more of a commercial-oriented posture in some of these, you know, high-value, long-term strategic franchises that you called out, whether it's, you know, cyber, directed energy, hypersonics, et cetera? And any color there would be much appreciated. Thanks.
Sure. So on the first part, as you know, the $8 billion number, obviously it's a free cash flow number, so it includes any kind of pension contributions. On the UTC side, we are pretty much fully funded, so there is really no call on pension from our perspective. And Raytheon has been very clear about the pension contributions that they need to make over the next several years. They also have significant cash recoveries, which are going to come through. but this assumes a step up in pension funding in 2021. Toby, if you want to add.
Yeah, Carter. So for us, it's in absolute terms, it's about $1.1 billion, $1.2 billion, which is a $600 million increase compared to what we're expecting in 20. But that's included in the $8 billion that you were referring to.
In terms of the investing through the cycle, this is one of the things that Tom and I have talked a lot about. And I think, again, Tom's concept of building franchises at Raytheon, this combination gives us the ability, as you point out, Carter, to continue to invest across the entire platform and to grow the franchises in an even quicker and stronger fashion. Again, think about this, $8 billion of R&D we're going to spend. We've got 60,000 engineers. We're going to have revenues this year roughly 75 on a pro forma basis, next year almost 80. If you take a look, I mean, the growth trajectory of both businesses is phenomenal. The cash growth is even better. And that cash growth gives us the ability to do two things. One is, of course, to return some to shareholders that we talked about, but also to invest in all of these technologies and all of these franchises. I think that's the exciting part of this merger.
I think the other element of the merger versus an acquisition is, in the end game, our credit rating is going to be a great credit rating. We're going to be an A category credit rating for the company, which having that amount of powder dry gives us many opportunities to essentially take advantage of in the future.
That's great. And so on that first one on the pension, that $8 billion includes both the envisioned step-up in funding as well as the anticipated CAS recoveries that Raytheon had in the first place, correct?
That's correct. And just as a reminder, those CAS recoveries are pretty flat, you know, this year out into the next two or three years, right around $1.9 billion.
Okay, great. Thanks, Toby.
Sure.
Thanks, Carter.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Julian Mitchell of Barclays. Your line is open.
Thanks very much, and congratulations. Maybe a first question for me around the capital structure and shareholder returns. So maybe give us some sense around, you know, how quickly, if at all, that $26 billion of net debt figure should come down. And then when we're thinking about that $18 to $20 billion of shareholder returns over 3 years, is the simplest way of thinking about that just a sort of 50-50 split between buybacks and dividends with a sort of 35-40% dividend payout?
Yes to all those questions, I guess. I think the dividend point, this is Akhil, by the way. Dividend and share buyback, roughly 50-50. I think the commitment we have made is that we did on the UTC side was that the combined dividend from Otis, Carrier, and RemainCo would be equal to or more than what we have been giving thus far. And I think if you add to that what Raytheon's dividend is, the $1 billion roughly that they give out every year with significant growth on a year-over-year basis, that would all come to probably around $9, $10 billion at this point over the 3 years. So the remaining amount would be what we have allocated for share buyback, and that's how the math works there. With regard to deleveraging, given the strong balance sheet that we have, right now we are assuming that most of our free cash generation after some of the investing outlays would go towards return to shareholders, because with the growth in EBITDA that we are expecting with these companies over the next few years, we can still maintain a very strong rating without having to deleverage any further. That's the big benefit of this merger as well, where the shareholders can see some immediate benefits without having to focus on deleveraging, which would otherwise have been the case for the UTC RemainCo.
Hey, it's David Strauss also on.
Julian, say that again.
Hey, it's Greg. It's David Strauss on the
phone. Oh, hey, David.
Hey, so I just want to ask Tom a question. You know, from a competitive landscape, I guess, with most of your peers having done deals and then Harrison Elfrey merging, did you not think you could go it alone here, or did you really think you needed to find a partner to get bigger?
Well, let me go back to we constantly are always looking for opportunities to provide a more value generation for our shareholders, and we obviously pursue that very well on the organic side. We've been growing year over year. It's actually had accelerating growth since 2015 in the business, and the majority of that growth was organic growth, and it was based on the investments we made improving our existing franchises and then and capturing new franchises. We've done a very good job of that since 2014. We're always looking to do what's the next major move for the company, and we were looking at that. I think that's a fiduciary responsibility we have to the shareholders to continue to work value creation. And we actually specifically laid out the type of company we would like to acquire or merge with multiple times in multiple sessions with investors. And once UTC spins off the Otis and Carrier, that essentially winds up having the attributes of the company we talked about. It has a great technology base. It has some great existing franchises. That technology it has, combined with ours, can help generate new franchises moving forward. It has a strong international footprint. And the bottom line is its culture is very similar to the Raytheon culture. So to me, it was a natural fit, again, once the spinoffs of Carrier and Otis occur.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Robert Stallard of Vertical Research. Your line is open.
Thanks so much, and good morning.
Robert, good morning.
I don't know if it's a question for Greg or Tom, but I was wondering if you've had any chance to check in with the DoD as to what their response to this combination could be, and whether there could be any other regulatory risks out there that we're not fully aware of.
Well, I think, as you might imagine, we want to make sure we don't surprise our customers, so we try to make sure we reach out to all our customers. And by the way, it's an ongoing activity here. Before this call, after this call, we'll continue to reach out to our customers. Our customers are very important to us. We want to make sure they understand what we're doing, why it's important for them, what's the benefit our customers will achieve by this, and we're being very clear about that. There's the one in terms of the $1 billion of growth annual synergies that after 4 years essentially converts into about a $500 million a year savings to our customers due to the reduction in our rates, and then also on existing cost-plus contracts, being able to get a lower cost on those contracts moving forward. So I think, and then the other big area that I believe they're going to be excited about is the complementary technologies we have. We constantly hear words about the DoD wanting to go to Silicon Valley for the commercial technology. Well, they don't have to go to Silicon Valley anymore. We have that technology with the combined companies. It's very complementary technology. We're applying that technology in the commercial world. We're applying that technology in the defense world. And so they're going to have the best of the best. And I think they're going to, at least what I believe, is that this is definitely something that's going to be very powerful for our customers moving forward.
And I think, from a regulatory standpoint, just to follow on what Tom said, I think our customers are really going to appreciate what we're doing. So we don't see big pushback from DOD. In fact, they will see huge benefits from this, as will all of our customers. And I think from a regulatory standpoint, the beauty of this deal is there is very little overlap. You're talking, on a basis of $75 or $80 billion in sales, less than 1% of our sales probably have overlap. This is truly a complementary deal from a technology standpoint, from a product standpoint. So, we think regulatorily, we'll have to, of course, get approval here in the EU, but really less than 10 jurisdictions have to approve this. We don't have to go to China. We truly believe that we're going to get this done relatively quickly. Our goal right now is to have regulatory approval by the first quarter of next year, which would be coincident with the dates of our spin, such that we could execute the spins and the close of this transaction at the same time. We don't see any impediment to getting that done.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes in the line of Myles Walton of UBS. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Miles.
I was wondering if you could walk us through, maybe Tom, how you got comfortable with the equity split, the 43-57. Was it DCF-based? How did you get comfortable with the GTF, kind of long-term positive NPV versus the near-in negative NPV, not something you're accustomed to in the defense complex? So just walk us through the valuation that made you comfortable with the terms and conditions.
Yeah, let me start off with, so we formed the teams back in January. We brought in outside folks to help us look at every single element of each business. Obviously, United Technologies was doing their diligence of the Raytheon portfolio, and we were doing our due diligence of their portfolio. We looked at multiple ways of looking at the valuation, obviously with the discounted cash flow being our preferred method in this scenario. And I'll let Toby talk a little more in details about that. But I will tell you is that we spent quite a bit of time reviewing each other's portfolio, and obviously there's the financial standing and the risks. We did have outside consultants come in and work with us going through and understanding the geared turbofan and where it was at in its life cycle. We got very comfortable with that, especially based on field data that we're seeing today. And that was, I think, a good news story. But the bottom line is that both boards were heavily involved in the whole process and stepping through all of this. So I think there was a lot of transparency between the two companies and understanding both portfolios. And again, discounted cash flow was what we really, I would say, was our preferred method of determining whether the valuations were fair. I'll turn it over to Toby to say a few more.
Yes. Things. So, Miles, we did use DCF ultimately as the methodology to determine the relative ownership, as Tom said. And specifically, we did have a lot of questions on GTF, and Greg and the UTC team were very transparent in taking us through that. A couple things in addition to what Tom said, the majority of the upfront investment, relatively speaking, is in the past. Number one, the performance metrics that we've seen, the aftermarket situation and how things are structured there, out over the expected life of the program, got us very comfortable as to how that fit into the overall valuation. So clearly it was, once we understood it a little bit, it was our biggest question mark, but we did get comfortable based upon the level of detail the UTC and the Pratt folks shared with us there.
I would just add to that, Miles. I think we did a better job explaining the GTF investment and returns to Raytheon than we've probably done to the rest of our investors. But it was a lot of work. I think we put a model together that went out about 45 years, which is the life of the program. And not only did we get the value for the GTF, we also, of course, modeled in all the synergies from Rockwell Collins. And so this whole process of coming up with a true DCF value of UTC's Aero RemainCo going forward. It was a thorough process. I think it was the same on the Raytheon side. I think we came to this split. There wasn't, at the end of the day, had to be a lot of negotiations. The DCFs really spoke for themselves in terms of what the value of these two great businesses are. And again, I think we're getting full value for our investments, and I think Raytheon is getting full value for its investments in this equity split. So, no magic. Just the beauty of a DCF model.
Okay, great. I'll leave it at one. Thanks.
Thanks, Miles.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Seth Seifman of J.P. Morgan. Your line is open.
Hey, thanks very much, and good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to ask a question a little bit about cycles, and one of your first bullet points, talking about the value that's created by the deal had to do with, creating a business that was more diversified and kind of withstand the business cycle, I guess. But, Tom, when I listen to you talk, it sounds like, you've got a lot of growth ahead independently, and, you've talked a lot about the demand signals coming out of the threat environment. And so I guess why take the risk of introducing a lot of commercial aerospace into that outlook where there's a lot of macro sensitivity? And then I guess the flip side of that, for Greg, having, the GTF and having the synergies from the Collins deal to drive earnings there and already having a fairly big diversified company, why kind of take on the defense budget at a time when the top line in the U.S. defense budget seems to be slowing?
Yeah, so Seth, let me take the that first part. I think number one is what we are seeing is you're absolutely correct. We are seeing a significant push by the Department of Defense in the area of modernization. And then as I said on our calls, earnings calls, and in our any meetings we've had and any conferences, the Raytheon Company is very well aligned. We're aware the department's going. We're very well aligned with the National Defense Strategy and the Missile Defense Review before they came out. Relative to our existing franchises and the technologies we're developing for our next generation franchise. That said, I think what we did see is that a need for even more technology and the ability to go and invest in technology to go create those next generation franchises to meet the demands of our customers on the B side. And the technologies, and complementary technologies that UCC has just fit almost perfectly in with the technologies that we need to continue to drive the modernization side of our business. So that was a natural, that was just a natural fit. And I think it does make us a much more resilient company moving forward and overall relative to the different business cycles of either the commercial or the defense.
And keep in mind, Seth, if you think about the UTC Aero business post-separation of the commercial businesses, we'll be about 25% defense. We've got huge franchises around the Joint Strike Fighter engine, but also military avionics, military communications, the ISR franchises, all of those things that dovetail perfectly into the technologies that Raytheon has. So to me, this is not about, you know, moving into a new marketplace. It's simply about a complementary business that already is part of the market that we exist in today. So I think, again, it's, you know, it does de-risk, I think, overall the combined companies. But the growth trajectories of the commercial aerospace business are still solid. You know, we see kind of 5, 6, 7% growth coming forward. Even on the Raytheon side, as we've looked at this, it's, you know, you're going to see growth 5, 6% you know, going forward. So you got two great franchises here at the top with a lot of great franchises underneath. They're going to contribute to growth and contribute technology that is just unparalleled.
And Seth, just one other point. This is Akhil. We haven't talked for a while, but just one data point which always amazes me on the commercial aero side is that in spite of this above-trend growth that we have been seeing in air traffic, there is still only 20% of the world's population that has ever flown. So as the incomes are rising in China and India and other parts of the world, you're going to continue to see significant growth in air traffic and as a result on the commercial aerospace side. So I don't think that cycle is anywhere at risk of a big turndown of any kind.
Great. No, thanks for a very detailed answer. Just to have a short follow-up, just to be clear, should we think about for the combined company, the company-funded R&D being higher than it might have been independently?
It depends on what the programs are that we invest in, right? So it's a function of, to the extent that the customers are paying for development work, we would obviously want to take advantage of that. But if there is another engine, if we were to, for example, win the NMA, if that does get launched or whatever, then it will be company-funded R&D. So it all depends on the time, the cycle, and where the investments are.
The key is we've got tremendous flexibility to invest where we see the greatest opportunity going forward, whether that's spending our own money or investing even alongside our government customer in some of these new technologies. And again, the resources of the combined company will allow us to do things that on a standalone basis would have been very difficult.
And Akhil's answer, right, for UTC, it's the same we've always said for Raytheon, right? If we see the right opportunity, we're going to flex, but we're not going to, you know, spend at a higher level just for the sake of staying at that level. So, it, again, another very complementary and aligned view of the combined company.
Disciplined approach to research and development, right, is the bottom line.
Yeah, the key is always returns on investment, right?
Right.
So if all these programs generate positive returns on investment, significantly above cost of capital, and as long as that's the case, you could see some perturbations on quarter-to-quarter or year-to-year in investments.
Great. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Seth.
Thank you. And our next question is on the line of John Revive of Citi. Your line is open.
Hey, thank you, and good morning.
Good morning,
guys,
John.
Talking about an almost an evolving industry landscape, I get that we're trying to commingle aerospace with defense, but you know, to me it would seem that you know, the aerospace customers are not asking to contract more like the defense side. The defense conscious customers want to contract more on the commercial side. So with that in mind, you know, what does this really bring? What are the defense customers really asking you to do here? And similar to Carter's question, but you know, on a bigger scale, how do you expect to do business differently with the DoD going forward? You know, can you change the return metrics in this business to drive more of that legacy Rockwell Collins type defense margin into other defense franchises?
Well, let me take the first part, and it kind of follows up from some of the other questions we had. I think relative to our defense customers, what this deal provides, it provides access to significantly more technology. and the technology is complementary to what we've had before. So, but for example, one of the areas is an area of hypersonics. And in hypersonics, one of the biggest issues in hypersonics is heat and getting rid of heat and reducing the temperatures of certain areas via the materials you use and or by thermal management type systems. And that's an expertise out of Pratt & Whitney that can be leveraged directly into the military side. And then on the other side versus on the commercial side, technical understanding of cybersecurity that Raytheon has can be leveraged over into the commercial aerospace part of the business and helping protect and securing aerospace and civil aviation. So there's complementary technologies on both sides. Some of them combined together, like 1+1=3. But in the end game, I think that's the benefit to our defense customers is having a strong technology base that's going to enable us to provide them the franchises they need to complete their modernization requirements.
And the return metrics?
I don't think you're going to fundamentally change the return metrics on any of these programs. The fact is we still compete across all of the platforms that are out there today. We're not a sole source provider in very many things. But the returns are still attractive. I mean, obviously well in excess of our cost of capital. And, again, the leverage that you're going to be able to get from this company, combined company, should allow us to drive down costs such that you can actually improve margins over time just through procurement synergies, back office synergies, and the focus on cost reduction that we always have.
And the other thing, John, is that if we use commercially developed technology for defense applications, that can allow us to get differentiated margins because then they are no longer a cost-based program. And that can sometimes be a differentiation. The example you gave of Rockwell Collins, that was certainly true in that case, and that's another opportunity that the combined business will have to do more of that and hopefully it will positively impact the margin.
Thank you very much, John.
Okay. Thanks, John. So I think that's going to wrap it up. I want to first of all thank everybody for dialing in this morning and the great questions. I also want to thank the Raytheon and the UTC team for having worked for the last 6 months to get this deal done. It was a tremendous effort, but I think we're going to have a very, very exciting company. These two companies share a long history in innovation, industry-leading expertise, and great execution. In short, we've got two aerospace and defense leaders that are going to define the industry going forward. We're committed to a successful merger that's going to benefit not just our share owners, but our employees and our customers, our communities, and all the stakeholders that are out there. So, again, thank you for joining us. Kelsey and Carol will be available all day with their teams to answer your questions. And I look forward to seeing a lot of you in the coming weeks between Toby and Akhil and Tom and myself. I just want to thank everyone again.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This does conclude the program. You may now disconnect. Everybody have a great day.